Yo, what's going on, man? It's the Microphone Fiend, man. You know what it is, man. Hard Knock Radio, man. Play it loud. Make sure you know what time it is, baby.
Hey, this is Dawn.
And I'm Max.
From En Vogue.
And you're listening to Hard Knock Radio. News, views, and hip-hop.
Yo, this your brother Bamboo.
This is DJ Fat Trick.
We are on Hard Knock Radio. You are listening to the news, views, and hip-hop from the progressive perspective. Yarra brat.
Figure.
Mindfulness. What we talking about is mindfulness. Feel it in your spirit. Mindfulness. It's good for your health. Mindfulness. Up early, late night before the sun rises. Hot tea, candlelight, no electronic devices. It's quiet now. While the world sleeps, I'm awake. Take time to contemplate and give thanks and pump the bass. Self-aware, self-care, taking care of self. Get all the bag you want, but wealth is your real health. Silence outside, opinions about you. And do the inner work, is in the truth, that's the real you. The nighttime is the right time for me to kick a rhyme. 20 years later, still reaching my prime. Without the Amazon or the cameras on, don't wanna be a dime. More like a chroma, not the images that are forced upon a psyche. This might be the best thing for your protection as you go and bop to this. Water, meditation, exercise, breathe, life, stand for your rights. This is mindfulness.
David D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. And I wanted to start off with a song. I like it, Mindfulness. It's off an album from a gentleman by the name of Jahi. He is with the group Public Enemy. And man, first of all, before we even talk about this song, you're just coming off a big high. You know, we saw you at the BET Awards. Was it the BET Awards? Yes, sir.
It was the BET Awards, yep.
Yeah, they didn't have your name on the lineup, but, you know.
Well, you know how it goes. When you know what, 22 years later, I'm still the rookie.
Yeah.
But you can't take me off. You can't take my bars off, and you see me, so I give thanks for that.
Yeah, for people who don't know, they did a remake of Public Enemy, Fight the Power.
That's right.
It was a tribute to the current situation we're dealing with, you know, the George Floyd rebellion, Breonna Taylor, all that sort of stuff. And it featured an all-star lineup. So, you know, Nas was there, and Nas is one of the best of the best.
Nas, man. Hey, can I just for a minute on my MC, like, hat? Nobody really has attacked Fight the Power beat the way Nas did it. If you look at the style and the cadence in which he did it, that was like legendary. That was one. So it really made it feel like an honest remix. And then again, Century 17, Salute Toussaint and Desaline, sent you to your, you know, to do some homework.
Yeah.
And really shout out to Black Thought, YG, Rhapsody, man, Nas. And of course, here's the thing though. No matter what we did, it will never top the original classic by Chuck D. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is not the Fight the Power is our Marvin Gaye's What's Going On. So it's like, to do a remix is like paying homage, but in truth, we could have just played the original version, you know, and shout out to Flav too, because he was in the mix.
Yeah. I mean, I think music speaks to a different generation, to each generation, and it has to rise to the moment. That's what was needed. And, you know, I think the thing that stood out for me in that song was seeing Absolutely Rhapsody. You know, a lot of times women are left out. And did she come on as a visual with her Kaepernick shirt, she spit bars. But
man,
I started off by talking about that because you have Black Thought, you have Nas, you know, two of the best. So, you know, and here's Jahi. What's Jahi going to do? You know,
well, look,
let me just say this. you know. Now, in theory, and this is no slight to you, you know, no matter what you do, because the music is also how I know you. So even if you walked on water, they're still going to be like Nas was the bomb. Even if you bring Jesus Christ and Tupac back, they're going to know Black Thought. Black Thought could have messed up, right? What you did do that for that show, you didn't mess up. Ain't nobody could say, man, who the hell messed up the song? You held your own. It was like we needed a base hit in the bottom of the ninth so we can hit this home run. You yep. came to the plate. You got your hit.
Look, man, absolutely, man, because if you really check out the song, I'm the only MC that got 8 bars. So
really?
Not only I got 8.
I don't count bars. I just listen
okay,
to who's
yeah. So again, it's like eight bars is like okay, so everybody had 12 and 16. I think Black Thought maybe went 18. So they're here. It's like, how do I say what I want to say in 8 bars? So I just, again, man, I got to give thanks. You know, people don't know the hidden narrative, man. It's like when your brother and a hero by the name of Chuck D is like, yo, I'm not even going to do this if my man Jai ain't on it. That just shows you the level of commitment that he does for folks like myself, man, who've been trying to continue to grind and put in the work, man. But I was just, to me, man, I was just humbled. I kept saying to myself, I was like, man, Black Thought is on this track, Nas is on this track, Rhapsody is on this track. Like, I'm not going to mess up. That's one thing I'm not going to do.
Right.
But I also was ready for the moment, too. I had, man, this
was it. Was it live? Y'all did it live? Yo, so it was pre-recorded.
And quick.
Okay.
And quick. It was like, yo, we doing this. I need this tonight. Tomorrow, show up, shoot this video here, and go. So it really wasn't a lot of time, man. But what I'm hoping is that we created another historical artifact, man, with Fight the Power for the new generation. You know, shout out to YG, man, because, you know, YG does a lot of different music. But he came through on that, man, and used the Tupac references from Changes as well, too.
Right.
So I just thought it was a really good look for BET. And I'm going to shift as the sun is starting. Yeah.
People, stronger than this evil, smashing your power structure, melanin royal regal, system designed to kill and unprotect, worldwide hit the streets just to get some respect, our fight and our rights for freedom will never waver, justice Breonna Taylor, salute Chuck and Flavor, feel the same anger since Radio Raheem died, black power to the people, push forward pride.
Fighting power like it's an octo. Born to fight, I made it off the block though. Thought he had a gun and he was black, that's the combo. The police killed George having a convo. They killed Malcolm X, they killed Dr. King. They gave us guns and dope, they wanna stop a king. Trying to erase our history, stop and think. History class ain't tell us about Juneteenth. Cops don't give a damn about a Negro. Pull a trigger, kill a Negro, he's a key, bro. Us living life on welfare. The last one who cared was Obamacare, round 12. Nose kinda bloody, gotta keep fighting. Trump through the North Korea, they respect violence. If you ain't trying to have your city on fire, put some respect on our name. We come from Golden Dawn.
Yeah, we're talking with Jahi, talking about his performance with Public Enemies, Fight the Power. It was good to see the whole crew there and see the additional MCs and, you know, seeing Rhapsody, who shined, and seeing YG as well. YG, yeah. You know, represents...
Rhapsody, real quick, though, but Rhapsody, when she talked about George killed for 2,000 pennies. I mean, she hit every point, man. And I think, you know, to be honest, man, and I'll keep it 100, man. If they would have said, yo, we need 2 female MCs, we need Cy-Rock, or we need, I would have jumped off the track.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I would just say that if they would have said Cy-Rock, I would have been like, here's my 8-bar space. Go ahead. Because,
well, Cy-Rock is one of the best of the best. And to name herself Cy-Rock, knowing that the queen of MCs, the pioneer, was Cy-Rock. And,
that's right.
You know, and me being a former MC, and I can attest, you know, Cy-Rock coming out of the Bronx was the person you went to see when it was the Funky Four plus one more. Everybody in that crew was good. But you walked away and you started reciting Cy-Rock's rhymes. I don't care if you were the man or woman, you know, you didn't even change the cadence, you know, like I'm a queen, and people are like, man, that's how the rhyme go. I'm just saying it because her flavor was so, I mean, just so potent. But I'm not alone. I mean, DMC from Run DMC will tell you that Sha Rock was the influence. And
yeah,
and our sisters, you know, they often don't get a lot of shine in terms of what they you know, how they have positioned many of us in this movement. In fact, in your book, Microphone Journeyman, you know, in case you don't know, Jahi has a couple of books out as well as albums and all that. Trying to be Paul Robeson, I don't know. writing books and doing all kind of stuff. But you talk about Lauryn Hill is the cement for you. This is the foundation. You listen to Lauryn Hill and said, I want to be like her.
No, real talk. Lauryn Hill, you know, my top four and my top 10 is immovable. It does not change. It's Rakim, KRS, Chuck D, Lauryn Hill. That's my top four all time.
Right.
I'll put those four up against anybody. But Lauryn Hill, man, in 1998, man, which is a crucial, pivotal time for myself, man. You know, a lot of people think when I moved out to the Bay, I just started working in community stuff. But by 98, I was already 7 years in working in nonprofits, working with young people and things like that. And you know, I remember, you know, I was telling somebody a story the other day, man. I remember the director of education was like, come in my office. He's like, you see my office, my desk? He was like, man, you're so great at what you do, man. This could be you. And I left that office like, man, I don't want that to be me. I hope there's something else in the cards for me. So, you know, I knew that, and I just been a fan of hip hop at that time. I wasn't even serious about rhyming, but it was 98 when I really was like, okay, let me see if I could actually, you know, do something. And there was a lot of conversation around, oh man, you're going to try to do that positive stuff, man, that don't sell, that whoop, wop, wop. And Miss Lauryn Hill came through.
And proved everybody wrong.
Miss Education of Lauryn Hill proved everybody wrong. Took all their Grammys, all of their awards, was very conscious. But the song, The Final Hour, was the one that was on repeat for me because it showed me that, okay, you got to have your skill level still got to be sharp, sharp, sharp. But you can actually really go deep in your lyricism and say some things that speak truth to power, man. So I always salute Miss Lauryn Hill, man. I've seen her perform, man, many, many times, and also humbled and honored, man, to get a chance to finally meet her New Year's Eve, 2019, yeah. Fox Theater. She did the New Year's Eve into 2019, and I was able to give her one of the drums that I make, man. So Miss Lauryn Hill is always, as much as, you know, DMC was the, you know, whack rap name, but my first rap name was TMC.
Man, that's TMI. We didn't need to hear that.
Look. but I had to do that to shout out DMC, because DMC was the ground zero for me. Like, I want to rap. Like, Run DMC definitely put it in place, but it was Miss Lauryn Hill that gave me a lot of courage to make that leap to become, you know, to 1999 to make that move.
So if we had a tree, the tree would have Sha Rock, which gives birth to DMC, which gives birth down the road to, or inspires Jahi, who then gets nurtured by Lauryn Hill, and here you are, you know?
And then connect with a Chuck D, and, you know, I have to say, man, I'm just humbled and honored for this life that I'm living in hip-hop culture, man. Give thanks for hip-hop culture, because I'm pretty certain without it, I'd be gone off this planet by now.
So let me ask you this, before we talk a little bit about your books. You know, we talked with Jahi. He has the book called The Microphone Journeyman. He has The Intersection Between Hip-Hop Culture and Education, The Museum Experiences. These are two books. He also has an album. I want to say the guy's name is Koniger. I play his stuff fast forward.
Configure. Out of the UK. Hey man, that's my European brother, man. He got some boom bap soul in him, man.
Yeah. Yeah, so you got a lot going on. And then, of course, being a member of the Public Enemy camp, there's been some criticism that hip-hop has not stepped up to this moment in time. We're in a pandemic. We're seeing unprecedented amounts of domestic terror, and that's what I call police brutality now. Mm-hmm. It is forms of domestic terror that we have not seen in generations. 74 people have been shot by police, and I think killed maybe since George Floyd was murdered on May 25th. Mm-hmm. That's just one side of it. You know, we were doing a show earlier this week, and people were talking about, oh, five kids got killed, and they were blaming the black community, and I had to remind them, here's a chart. It was 61 kids that were shot all across the board on the July 4th week. 31 were killed, right? So America has a problem with violence, and I bring this up to say that it doesn't like black people, it doesn't like young people, and people are like, hey, man, you know, where's it going? From where I sit, you know, I've actually feel that a lot of people have stepped up. It was good to see YG. It was good to see Lil Baby, you know, out of Atlanta with, you know, bad experience. I mean, a bigger picture and a number of others. But do you feel that hip-hop has stepped up to its full potential at this moment in time?
You know, that's a complex question. I would say globally, yes. I would say globally, yes, because I'm going to take it out of the United States and think about around the world. The global solidarity that I saw from people around the world speaking about this was really encouraging in the music and in the culture. And not just MCs, but graffiti writers. You know, I saw a lot of graffiti writers around the world that really, you know, they didn't know who Breonna was. They didn't know who George Floyd was, but they put the murals up. You know, I saw that around the world, so I was really encouraged by that. I'm challenged when I see people who have not been in this. I mean, Dave, man, respectfully, man, it's my 22nd year, man. So, you know, I'm challenged when I see people flip and try to, like, now get into a conscious spirit and a Black Lives Matter and putting that in their rhymes because they're speaking to the times. But when you look at their discography, a lot of their music has been anti that all the way up until this moment. Now, people still have I'm a lifelong learner in the process of transformation from good to great. So I'm still growing and changing. So I think if this moment helped a younger artist to be able to become more conscious, more aware, to realize that they can say something in their music, I think I'm all for that. But I also will say that hip hop culture still has a lot of growing up to do. It's still a baby culture. We're not even a 50-year culture yet. And this kind of speaks to how we need to also grow up more. When the number one song on Billboard was Trolls with those folks, I'm not naming them, I'm just gonna name the title of the song. But when you see if you look in the 60s and the 70s, look at the number one songs on the charts or the songs that were really touching the people, they were really speaking to the times. But it's like in 2020, it was like people still was trying to force the party a little bit, still trying to force so I feel that way, that I'm still a little bit challenged by the image that's coming out of the United States in particular as it relates to hip hop is scattered all over the place, and people are not realizing that image when it goes around the world. Some people will say, oh wow, they're waking up, they be this more encouraging. Some people say, man, they just stuck, they getting killed and still on that BS, you know what I'm saying? So I think you know, I learned this from you, Davey, 2001. I'll never forget this quote. Everybody has to play their position. Everybody has to find their position and to be able to play that. And I think these times are putting people to have to ask questions and answer, what position can I play? What position am I playing in the demise and the degradation of us? And then what position can I play to uplift us as well? So,
you mentioned the 1960s, and you talked about, you know, if you looked at the charts, it reflected the times.
In some ways, yeah.
In many ways, it did. But also, as a student of that time period, and I'm sure like somebody like Ricky Vincent will attest to this as well, it was a fight in every sake of the word. You know, Marvin Gaye doesn't do his landmark albums, which comes out in the 70s, but we'll just include it. It's a fight with Barry Gordy. You know, Norman Whitfield is literally fighting Barry Gordy to have the Temptations just do some positive songs. Sure. Gamble and Huff might have been, you know, might have had the most freedom to do mm-hmm. some things. And even James Brown, you know, we give him props for saying Loud, I'm Black, and I'm Proud, but, you know, he literally had to be stepped to by the Black Panthers. You know, yeah. H-Rap Brown has to step to him and be like, yo, man, what the hell are you? This is James Brown, right? Mm-hmm. So we talked with people earlier this week, and one of the things that's been said is that capitalism and this system adapts itself. And you tell me, but within the industry, it's adapted itself, and, you know, and it's been like, we're not moving in these directions. You know, you can have access to the masses through our radio stations and through our record labels and through our distribution channels, but it's got to be along this page. So Lior Cohen heads up YouTube, so your algorithms get switched. I mean, we got kids. My kids pull up Lauryn Hill, and what's next to Lauryn Hill on the algorithm? It's 6ix9ine with his troll song. So they're going Lauryn Hill, who they look for, and they're seeing that's what's being exposed, not Psy Rock, right. not right. Rhapsody. Right. And then, you know, the radio stations, you know, we're not even going to waste time on that conversation.
Yeah,
but I ask this to say, what do you see being done differently outside the United States that maybe we need to learn from to adapt here? Because you mentioned globally, it seems like a lot of people have stepped to the plate, and I see a lot of people step to the plate, but what is it going to take to get to that next level in terms of exposure?
Well, I think in 2020, the one thing that we have access to is this level of technology right now. So we don't have to have the radio conversation, because I can make a playlist today and I can just circumvent the radio altogether. And I think people have now empowered themselves. You spoke a little bit about capitalism. And I think that this is a great, you know, the quarantine for me has been a blessing, because it's helped me to slow down and also study more, to take another dive into my study to become a student and become more aware and become more knowledgeable about the power of economic empowerment and how economic empowerment does not necessarily mean capitalism. You know what I'm saying? Like how you can understand those things from a different point of view. So I think in terms of where we are as an industry, I think about Harry Belafonte. I think about his ability when he was at the height of what he was doing, how he was putting on art, Miriam Makeba, Hugh Masekela, I could just go name him. So he was using his influence and using his finances in order to be able to encourage other people. So here we are in 2020 with more resources in hip hop culture than ever before, more technology than ever before. I think it's incumbent upon us to now start figuring out how do we use these things to be able to push things forward. And again, the algorithms, man, if I could, we all go through it. It's almost to, and I would, if I don't say this, man, I would be, take some time and get offline. Take some time and get off the algorithm. The algorithm be calling you in first thing in the morning. Be like, come on and get your daily, right? But what I would say, let me just say this. What I would say about around the I'm with you on the YouTube piece. I'm with you on those things. So what I'm saying is, if we have all the resources and we have all this knowledge and technology, then where is our YouTube? That's why Chuck created Rap Station. Rap Station, you know, looks just like how we're looking right now. We could do the same technology on our, you know, so let's build our own tools. We don't have to continue to use. Look at what Facebook is doing right now. Look at the meeting that just happened where they went to Facebook talking about hateful ads. And the NAACP president was like, great conversation, you know, very pleasant, but no change, no action. So it's like, but we're on these platforms on a regular. And I think there has to become a apex where we're like, okay, how long can we continue to support these other systems and structures that ultimately, again, your children are looking for Miss Lauryn Hill, but what they're really trying to give you is that trolls, right? And to be able to have a space where those things don't exist, I think that's the work that we have to continue to do. That's my thought.
You work with youth for a long time, and you know the allure that they have to things that are marketed to them directly and indirectly. I've worked in this industry where I work for some of these big companies, and they do what they call stealth marketing, for people who don't know. Stealth marketing takes on many forms. It may show up with somebody who sees you walk into a bathroom, and then me and you are going to be the marketers, and then we have a conversation after we size them up about the new car that's going on, and they're overhearing that conversation. That's one way. Or it may be that you walk into a store looking for diversity in dolls, which I remember with my daughter, and you know, and looking and seeing, oh, they got the black doll, the white doll, the Latino doll at my eye level. But my daughter, on her eye level, picks the white doll, and then you're like, how did this happen? And then you realize, you look on the shelf, at her eye level, there's no diversity. You know, little things like that, which aren't by accident, but by happenstance. So what we're talking about is, and there are documentaries that explain what I'm explaining. You know, you can see them online, Merchants of Cool, and then the follow-up, the Like Generation or two that break all this down.
Psychological profiles.
Right. So when you were working with youth, how did you wean them from this? Because they don't know they're being marketed to, and they're being literally being programmed.
Well, you know what, man? I would just say this, man. The blessing of working with young people is because there's so much information that is being marketed to them, but it's so much they don't know. And it's so much dope information that's out here in the world. So the powerful, you know, I'll give you an example. The intersection between hip-hop culture and education, a book that I have, is based on these experiences that I would do in museums. 100 minutes of presenting hip-hop as a world culture with life-affirming principles. Right. And when I would start the lecture, I would pick somebody in the audience and say this: I got a secret, but I'm not going to tell you until the 95th minute. Remind me to tell the audience what the secret is. And he'd be like, okay, cool. And then I commence to talking about hip-hop culture, not juxtaposing it between something negative and positive, just presenting people like Dref in London, who does life-size murals of black women celebrating them, talking about strutting and popping and locking from the West Coast. I went back and checked Hip Hop Evolution last night too, to see your influence, by the way. You know, I started talking about beatboxing, you know, and, you know, the mother, the father and the daughter that was beatboxing against each other, and talking about how hip hop is intergenerational. You know, I start breaking down the different elements. I start talking about DJ Premier as a producer. I start talking about entrepreneurship, start talking about street knowledge and fashion. And, you know, they're sitting on their seats, Davey. They like this on the edge of their seats. And at the 95th minute, the guy said, hey, what was the secret? And I'm like,
he remembered it. Okay.
He remembered, but here's the secret. We spent 100 minutes talking about hip-hop culture, and I never mentioned any of the popular rap, commercial rap people, music industry stuff that is being fed to our children. I gave them something different, and that's what we have to you know, I'll keep it 100. If we want to break the cycle of it, we got to step our game up and start exposing our children to hip-hop. Is so vast. I mean, it's almost like if you're talking about commercial rap, you're looking through a peephole, man. You're looking through a peephole thinking you see the whole thing. It's so vast, so it requires us to do another level of study. And what I've learned with young people is that they appreciate, you know what? Two things. If you put them on to something that they could be like, let me explore. And two, don't diss who they listening to. Even if you not don't like it, you might not even agree with it. You know what I'm saying? Kodak Black, I didn't know who he was. A young person put me on to him. I'm not a fan. And no disrespect, I'm just not a fan. But I did not diss. I was like, okay. Well, look, you know what? Let me put you on to, you know, Zion I. Have you heard of Zion I? They right out of here in the Bay. Oh, wow, for real? Oh, hey, that's slap. Okay, cool. So now you have what I think we've always been trying to create is this level of balance. you can't, that marketing piece is going to continue. But again, it's like your diet. You could eat Cheetos and a 2-liter Pepsi all day. It'd be cool. You could do that. But if you get some fruits and vegetables, some water, you know, some home cooked meals, some slow cooked food, you know, some live food, it will balance your diet out. So that's always been my strategy with young people. And then also sometimes I got to go listen deeper and be like, yo, you know, that song that you was listening to by Lil Baby, that one line where he said something right there, that was dope. I picked up on that. So it makes them, okay, yo, you know what? I appreciate that. So when I say, look, now what I want you to do is go with me back and listen to Rebel Without a Pause all the way through, they're more open to do so. So I just think that's a strategy that I've been able to use that has worked.
So do you think adults who, well, first of all, let me just ask you this, you know, or I'll assert this because I'm not asking, but you can agree or disagree from your perspective. Culture is shipped around the world, exported. It's one of the biggest exports around the world from the U.S., and in particular, black culture. But black culture, as Chuck D would say, that's been narrow cast. So it's not Jahi black culture. It is, let's get a caricature of Jahi, a stereotype of Jahi, and let's ship that around the world, right? So, you know, I often say black death and black pathology is big business, right? And it's big business for the prison industrial complex, but it's also big business for entertainment. You know, that's how they make their money. But with that being said, what about our peers as adults? How do we deal with them? Because, one, they're responsible for exporting this culture. People that are listening, people that are in our own community will do this. Some of them may not even realize they're a part of it because they'll say, hey man, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and the people want to see twerking, so I'm selling twerking. I'm a DJ at a nightclub. They're giving me $500 tonight. I'm not playing Public Enemy. I'm going to play the twerk, you know, City Girls, because that's what they want. So how do we start dealing with that contradiction in the middle of a pandemic? You know, I need to make my money. I didn't get a check. I didn't have food in the refrigerator. They need me to play twerk music. I'm playing twerk music. You want gangster stuff? I'm giving you gangster stuff. And yeah, it will be people outside our community that eat it up, but man, it's a paycheck and I got a 5-bedroom house as a result. So how do we deal with that contradiction?
You know, I think that's an internal question of your personal value system. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you feel like the twerking music is going to be what's going to provide your sustenance for your family, and you've made that decision and you're okay with that, then that's your choice. You have a right to be able to do that. But what I will say, especially after getting back from, you know, I was in Ghana last year, man, that a lot of people are starting to reject that image that's coming, that American image that's coming out of that caricature. People are now starting to say, you can take that back because you know, we got Sadiki. We got our own MCs. We could tell our own stories in our own language and our own voice now. So we don't want that caricature. We want something more. So I think there is a pushing back around the world. But the other part of it is that there is a level of acceptance by adults that are like, yo, hey, it's booty, booty, booty this week. I'm playing booty, booty, booty. And you're going to be mad if you want to, but I'm about to go get this paper. And
so how do you break that cycle then? And do we have to break that cycle?
I would say I don't have the answer on how to break that cycle. I'd just be humbled and honest and say that. One. Two, I think the way in which we break, or again, it's about balancing that cycle more so than breaking it, because I just the level of work that I think that it's going to take in order for us to break that cycle goes beyond hip-hop culture. It goes back to our morals, our values, our principles, what we live on, what we stand on, our generational trauma, the way we've learned, you know, what we've learned from generation to generation. And I think, again, that, you know, and a lot of times people want to break something. It's like, but then you leave a void, so that thing can regrow. Pull some weeds and they'll come back if you don't put some mulch or flip it and put some new things in. So I think my position of what I've been trying to do is be a living example of an alternative, you know, and although I'm a lifelong learner, I still make a lot of mistakes. I still am still growing. I'm still learning, but I'm getting better every single day. And I think the pandemic forced people to have, okay, wait a minute, club music, but I really ain't in the club. I ain't got in the club. I can't go to the club. I'm trying to pretend like my house is a club. This don't make no sense. You know what? The club music is not even, you know what? Am I going to get this unemployment check? When am I going to get back to work? How am I going to take it? How am I going to keep myself safe so I don't get elderly infected? So it's like, I think the times are forcing people to now have to have an interrogation of themselves and those things. And I think out of that, some people are going to still be like, if the club's back open, I'm going to the club. I get the strip club online? Okay, I'm going to go for that.
Which is funny because in many ways it's leading to people going, we need to get you back to work. We need to get you out the house. Let's open up quickly. Why? Because now, you know, I'm not just texting you because I would just text you because I was in a rush. I'm in traffic for 2 hours going to work. You know, I got two jobs to hold, but ain't no job, so I'm calling you now. And now, you know, like here at the house, you know, Sunday nights is, you know, it's Zoom time with the family. You know, the whole family is on Zoom time and everybody's sharing for 2 hours, right? All that communication is now starting to happen and people are going, oh, man, they learning stuff. They reading different books. They doing things, you know. When can you get back to work?
Well, you know what, man?
Because we don't want you sitting around building community. We need you back to work and distracted.
And here's the thing. And not only do we need you back to work, we don't want you to at home too long because you might actually get more woke than you are. So here's what we have to do.
And you won't go back to work because you'd be like, these conditions is crazy.
Right, but yeah, no, absolutely. Then you start, wait a minute, this structure, this hierarchy.
Why am I driving 2 hours to go to San Francisco? Nah, I think I'm not going back.
Hey, and here's the other thing, and we got to also look at this from Black Death, George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and so many others. We could just continue the names. What happens is I believe that part of it is a tactic as well, too. It's like, don't stay too home and start reading and get community and get centered, spiritually centered, mentally grounded, physically in shape. So now I'm going to spiral you out with fear. The people are acting like police brutality is a brand new thing. I had to tell a young white woman, I said, I will be 49 in September. And every year of my life, this has happened. You know what I'm saying? Like just in terms of me as a human being, every single year of my life as a black man on planet Earth, living in this place, I have had to deal with the trauma and the reality of these things. So it's like, and then even if you look at the pandemic, the narrative is about cases and death, but not about survival and adapt and adjusting and how people were using natural remedies and be able to take care of themselves. And also, people do not want to talk about how Africa was the least affected. People, you know what I'm saying? So it's like they would prefer to have us emotionally spent out, because if you're not emotionally spent out, you might actually be able to focus, and then you might able to realize, I don't need to necessarily go back to that particular job because now I have the wherewithal to build my own business. I don't necessarily need to go back to a low-paying, disrespectful job situation where leaders are being corrupt. I can actually determine my own destiny and collaborate with other like-minded people and do something better. And I just think that I'm always going to, as much as life has given me reason to be a pessimist, I'm always going to lean, to be hopeful and optimistic. And I think that is what we have to, like, really dig deep right now. And I think for the pandemic, during this pandemic time, it has revealed a lot. Sometimes the work that we need to do, and maybe sometimes the work that we've already done to keep ourselves fortified to be able to deal through these things. And I think about our ancestors, man. Our ancestors went through so much more with so much less. They didn't have all this technology. They didn't have the phone to be able to, you know, when the slave master was wilding out, they didn't have the phone to videotape that would go worldwide and then people would, you know, have worldwide condemnation. But we survived that. We not only survived that, we thrived that. We have built things. We are building structures that are going to continue to live. And I think that that is, for me, I think everybody, I think this is a great time for people to,
right.
Introspection is key, man. Yeah.
That's the voice of Jahi, artist, author, teacher, educator. He has two books, The Microphone Journeyman, Influences, Messages, Notes from the Stage, where he takes you on a journey through all his influence from the time he was in Jamaica, where people was like, is that Ziggy Marley you was fronting, you know, to his influence of Lauryn Hill, to the tours, the huge tours that you all went on as a member of Public Enemy, Wu-Tang, Premier, De La Soul, the Raps of God tour. A great book, and you know, your influence and friendship with KRS-One, a lot of gems in there, and I think if anybody gets a copy of it, it's good, because you kind of go in, you know, you pick an artist and a song, and you kind of go in and do this.
Right now, Davey, it's a collector's item, and I wanted to tell you why. We talked offline, but I wanted to online. The Microphone Journeyman became a collector's item, and here's why. Because I went back to Cleveland to celebrate my 20th anniversary in hip-hop. I started in 1999 at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, opening for Public Enemy. I went back in 2020. I actually was able to get this in before the pandemic started. In February 2020, I went back to be able to share my story. Chuck D came, you know, it was a really great night. And I had only, at that point in time, because I'm an independent publisher, I don't have no publishing deal or anything like that. I'm using my own resources to be able to put out and share my story. I was back to the too short vibe. I'm gonna get 100 and you know, flip 100. And what happened was, is that after the lecture in Cleveland at the Rock Hall, the book sold out. And what I had mailed copies to friends, people like yourself and others. But what my heart was so filled that Cleveland came out in February in the snow to represent Canada hometown, you know, coming home and purchased the book. And I was like, wow, what could I do to make it special for them? And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna make it a collector's item.
You need to put that book out, get a different cover. And you know, put a different cover. You got the black cover. Right. That's the collector's item. Don't hide wisdom.
Nah, all right. You know what? Based on what you just said, Davey, by the end of this year, the Microphone Journeyman will be re-released. I will add a few things and maybe some new music with it. And the intersection between hip hop culture and education is really the summary of experience of going around to 20 museums around the world. Not just in the United States, man. I was in Oslo, Norway at the Khartoum Gallery, man, with people from Ethiopia, Nigeria, nothing but Africans in the house in Oslo, Norway, man, which was dope. I was in Dublin, Ireland, Accra, Ghana, and then all over the United States, Harvey B. Gantt Museum, man, the George Washington Carver Museum, and then even here, the D. Young Museum, Oakland Museum of California, the MOAT. You know, so that book, to me, that book is like a summary of experience, and it's hopefully a motivator for emerging artists or creatives who may have ideas and feel like I can't do it because I don't have the financing. I can't do it because of this. I can't do, you know, and we all experience that. No matter what levels we are, we still feel like that. And I just wanted to like show that, yes, you can do. I actually wrote The Intersection starting in January and finished it during the pandemic and got it out to the people. You can be productive in these times.
And so you're writing a series of books, because you said, man, I ain't gonna write no 200 page books. I'm just gonna write a bunch of 50 page books.
I'm trying to be the hip-hop Jawanza Kanjufu. That's my whole goal. When you the counter conspiracy,
who is that? People don't know who that is.
Oh man, Jawanza Kanjufu, man, look, Google him. He wrote a series of books called Countering the Conspiracy to Destroy Black Boys.
Yes.
And those books were about 85 to 100 pages, full of information, and he put out a series of them over a period of time. And for me, in the early 90s, those books were instrumental to me in terms of as an educator, and just gave me some knowledge. So again, and again, I'm turning the corner, man. I could write an album in a weekend, but writing a book, that's why I was asking you yesterday about your writing process and everything and how you went about it, because I feel like, you know, after a 22-year career in hip hop, which will continue, you know, I'm at my infancy of writing books, man. But that's the way I want to do it. I think in 10 years, you'll be able to take 10 of my books and put them all together, and it'll be an anthology. That's the goal.
There you go. Well, you know, for anybody who writes, you got to write every day. I mean, there's no getting around it. You want to write, and you got to write. Even when you don't want to, so that it becomes reflexive when you're under pressure. Mm. You know, I had to write an article for Rebel Diaz, who we had on yesterday. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, and you know, and I didn't have time to do all that. But you know, you focus in, and you like you described being on the stage. Mm-hmm. In your book, Microphone Journeyman is how it is with writing. Like, we're gonna write this thing, we're gonna get it done. So 500 words later, it's done, and then I'm doing an interview with you. But it's an everyday process, and reading. You got to write. In order to be a good writer, you got to read.
And like Kevin Powell, I'm about to flip the whole script right now. I'm about to interview Davey D on Hard Knock Radio. So give me an example of things that you should read. You know, should you read things like, if you're trying to say you're going into anthropology, so should you get all the anthropology books, or should you read one?
You should read so you can see how people tell a story. Okay. So like Kevin Powell's good, and he would say the same thing, because I like how he can go first person and do like a long narrative, but then you pick up somebody else, like Ricky Vincent, you read his thing, and it's a different way in which he's telling a story. And then you pick up, even how you wrote is a different way of telling a story. So I think you read everything. You read the stuff from the young person on the block to, you know, to the more erudite person. Because what it will show you is like, okay, well, this is very heady, but this dude said the same thing and broke it down in 2 minutes flat, right? So you read it all, you know, read People Magazine, read TMZ, and read the books. Right. You know, Sister Soldier told me once, she said, you know, Dave, the reason why I'm successful is because I write my books so people who don't read can read. So she tells her stories in such a way that you can pick it up and understand, like, okay, this is what it's about, you know. Yeah. Versus like, you know, we can use multi-syllable words, everybody got a thesaurus, but then who are you impressing at the end of the day?
Oh wow.
You know, I mean,
like, if I, you know, I gotta, like, yeah, man. And you know what, I would also say even the audiobook game, man, is something that I realized, but at the same time, it's like, I want to do audiobooks, but I don't want it to hinder particularly high schoolers, because I think that some of the books that I'm writing really are going to go for like 10th grade up, and then college students. I don't want them to circumvent the idea of picking up a physical book and turning pages and actually read and just get off the hook by listening. Although I understand listening, you know, man,
we're oral people. Most people, man, information around the world through oral delivery. You need to hear the inflection. You need to feel the energy. So really, writing is an extension of your storytelling.
Yeah.
And so if you're good at telling stories, then how are you translating that on page? And I think where everybody got twisted, and I learned this when I was in college, because they were like, man, you are writing in colloquial terms. It's like, but you understood what I said, right? Yeah, but you know, they wanted you to have academic speak. So you do an academic speak, and nobody can understand you, and then next thing you know, you're peeled away from your community, when all I'm saying is, man, there's a dude across the street that's running around. Oh, I traversed across the, you know, the granite laden. Nah, dude, there's a dude across the street, because the real essence is what's he doing across the street versus
it's almost like the lyrical, like, throwing words around just so you can say that
rhyme for the sake of riddling. Don't do that.
We don't do that. We don't do that. Nah, man, I appreciate that wisdom, Davey, because I do. You know, I was thinking about you yesterday after I left, man. After we talked offline, man, I'm like, you know, my my entire career pretty much has been here in the Bay, man. And now, as I'm, you know, approaching 49 and then, you know, approaching 50, it's like the new corner turn is going to be around writing more books in my 50s. I'm always going to be an MC. I'm always going to put out music. You know, my big brother Chuck is about to be 60, and he ain't got no stop in him. Like, he's like, so that's always like my barometer and my motivation to always do rhyming. But as far as writing, I think, but I'm also trying to send a signal to hip hop artists that are over 40. If you're over 40 and you've been able to make some level of career of experience, no matter what level it is, don't try to base it on what Drake numbers were or anything like that. But if you've tried to bring something to this culture and you got a story to tell, that we should be telling our stories either orally or writing them down, because again, we are building, you know, being in museums, Davey, has really lifted up this idea that we are building a culture. And like, this interview is now an artifact. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, and people, you know, there's an African proverb that says when an elder passes, it's like an encyclopedia dies. It's like a library is gone. So there's a lot of experience that we have, no matter what level of success or what you felt about your career or your journey, that you could tell, that you could share to others. So I just, you know, highly encourage, you know, that people over 40 in particular that's in hip hop culture, because we are the, you know, 40s and 50s, we are the age of the culture. Tell your experience, tell your story, man, because it's going to motivate the next generation and leave artifacts. Because again, the pyramids are still standing today. Those are our ancestors. And I believe that 5,000 years from now, if there will be an earth, I don't know if it'd be humans, but if it is and they want to look back, we should be able to understand that as hip hop, we're building artifacts for the future.
That's the voice of Jahi. Jahi, we've run out of time. Microphone Journeyman, Influences, Messages, and Notes from the Stage. His other book, The Intersection Between Hip Hop, Culture, and Education, The Museum
Experiences.
And don't
forget the album. And don't forget the album, Forward Future.
We're gonna play it with your boy Configure. So we're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
People tend to play down our power. But don't worry about it. This makes God do it, unless there's God above to do it. There's a lot of things that has to change on this planet Earth that only we can change.
Forward future, forward thinking is here now. 2020 ever clear with champion sound now. Configure by Configure. Use words to paint pictures. Be authentic. Got our culture just to enter. The password is hip hop. Not kids, but grown men. Beats and microphones in my DNA and chromosomes. Word to the legendary. Forward direction. Very necessary. Careful and courageous times. Landmines. Watch where you step. Some would do anything just to get a rep. My integrity protect the future where I do my best work. Yet preservation and respect. And give me my check. Riches is accumulation. Wealth is when you build a nation. Mic check 1 2 1 2. Jahi and Configure straight. No chasing the you. Beats and a microphone. Move it to the forward future. Let's go.
Thank you. tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio and the Jazz Society of Oregon are thrilled to bring you the 40th annual Cathedral